You thought Millard, Kiprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. We packed you a lunch that packs a punch. This is Hockey Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome once again to Hockey Central at Noon. 9 games on the go around the NHL last night. Some crazy affairs and a fine to tell you about. 5 games this evening. The Jets in action against Arizona, Montreal, and Pittsburgh on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. And the Oilers host the Florida Panthers. Around the table, NHL hockey insider Chris Johnston from Sportsnet.ca. And Doug McLean is back once again in his familiar chair.
Yes, thank you for having
nice
me.
Nice to see you, Doug. Nice
first
to see
time
you,
I've
CJ.
Ever worked with CJ. It's kind of a thrill.
Maiden voyage for you, too?
Is it really the first time?
I think it might be. We've had you on the air a few times.
Yeah. I usually don't get a word in edgewise while you and Kippy argue about something. So,
welcome to me yesterday.
He's an argumentative son of a gun, isn't he?
Yesterday was fun.
Wasn't that much fun.
On today's page, we'll talk plenty about Jack Capuano and that situation. Arthur Staple from Newsday will drop by to talk about the Capuano situation. Dismissed yesterday by Garth Snow, Doug Waite takes over in an interim capacity. In the meantime, we'll get on the Maple Leafs page as we kick off each and every program with some Toronto Maple Leaf talk. They go down 2 pucks early, and instead of wilting, they come back. It is a 4-3 final. There was a goalie pull, a heated moment between Robin Leonard and Dan Bylsma. There was a FaceTime video taken beside the bench between Robin Leonard and a fan, and there was an outstanding couple of goals, one by James Van Riemsdyk and another by Austin Matthews. Doug, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on the comeback win yesterday by the Maple Leafs last night. Now 2 points shy of the Boston Bruins for second.
Yeah, you know, you like it. You've seen them blow some big leads early on in the season in particular. You like to see them battle back in a situation, especially at home. The one thing that you know, and if you're coming in to play the Leafs or you're playing them on the road, the one thing you've got to be aware is they can score. Yeah. And there's not many with so many teams in the league struggling to score, albeit a few strange games we've had this week, you've got to be careful because they can put the puck in the net. They've got the talent to do it, and that's a real plus. So I thought it was a good win. I thought it was a real good come-from-behind win. They lose Morgan Riley. Guys pick up extra ice time. That's a positive thing. Injuries, they've been lucky. You know, they've been lucky, and Babcock has mentioned that. They've been pretty well injury-free for the most part, especially their big guys. So that bodes well for them.
You mentioned Morgan Riley going out, and Chris, yesterday, picking up the slack. Jake Gardner specifically, and also Matt Hunrick, I thought was excellent last night.
Yeah, basically they're healthy left-hand shots got pressed into more duty. Jake Gardner actually played 2 more minutes than any Leaf had played in any individual game all year and did quite well. And we don't yet know really the severity of what Morgan Riley's dealing with, but that's going to be...
sound severe. I mean, I know I'm not a doctor.
There's hope.
But it does not sound severe, does it?
It didn't look good. That's for sure.
When you see a leg buckle underneath, it's never good.
Well, and the concern with Riley, too, is he had ACL surgery on his right knee in junior and missed a good portion of his draft year. You know, what was positive, I did see him last night in the hallway after the game. He wasn't limping. He didn't have any kind of brace or anything on. And the hope now actually is it's not related to the knee, that it might be another part of his right leg. So while we wait for an update on him, clearly Jake Gardner is going to have to take on more of a role. I think Matt Hunwick, who's... you know, quite maligned at times in among the Leafs fan base, is actually had a pretty good run here the last little bit. And, you know, Doug's point is well made that their success this year is a lot contingent on the fact they haven't had to deal with this. And, you know, we'll see how they soldier through.
A lot was made yesterday about, you know, where are these two teams at their development? And there was the belief that going into the season, the Buffalo Sabres were at a more elevated level than the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then the starts of Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Nylander as well, Zaitsev to a certain extent, sort of erased that gap. Does last night teach us anything at all, or was it just one game, Doug?
Well, you know what? There was a 5-point difference in the two teams going into last night's game. You know, that's not a big difference. When you consider the amount of injuries that Buffalo have had, it's a different rebuild. They've had to do it differently. Like, they end up with some draft picks that when Tim Murray took over that he didn't like. He thought they were guys that they were not going to – Gergensons, Zadorov. Obviously, they make that move for
– Grigorenko you're thinking of.
Grigorenko, I should say. Grigorenko, they move, and Zadorov, and they move him for Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah.
So you think that you're maybe fast-tracking your rebuild a little bit. You make the Myers for Kane. You know, I would say that neither team is overly thrilled with that trade. That's for – you know, Myers is not certainly lit the house on fire out there. And Kane is Kane. So, you know, so he's
looking to trade him for a while.
He's tried to fast track the rebuild and the injuries. We don't know if it's been successful or not. We really don't. Eichel goes down. Ryan O'Reilly goes down. Kane goes down. They've had injuries on their back end. They're goaltending. Is it worked? We don't know that yet. I think until you see the Buffalo Sabres with a full, healthy group, then we'll know if it's close. And again, anybody that says they knew Matthews and Marner were going to be this good is full of it. I can't believe how well they've played compared to what I thought they would this year. And I thought the Leafs would struggle because of it. Because I didn't think they'd be ready to be stars, and they are.
One of the things that was sort of pronounced yesterday is you look at the difference between these two teams, and Nick Kiprios mentioned on this program yesterday, hey, pay attention to this. Buffalo Sabres are not as quick as the Maple Leafs. They're not.
Well, there's only a handful of teams around the league probably that are.
But still, if you want to look at like where everyone's at on their skill development, and if you want to look at speed as being one of the issues at a premium in the NHL, the Maple Leafs have the Sabres licked that way.
Well, and the Sabres have struggled to score this year. I mean, that's been, and some of that is due to those injuries, no doubt. I mean, missing Eichel for half the season is going to limit the amount of goals you put in. But they've actually received, even though last night Robin Leonard got pulled and you saw his frustration about, you know, having been done so, they've got good goaltending this year.
Mm.
And, you know, I think that's one reason you would expect them to be a little higher up. And you can sense the frustration boiling in Buffalo. I happened to tune into WGR, the sports talk station, this week for a little while, and they're on Dan Bylsma, they're on Tim Murray, they're talking about trading this guy and that guy. I mean, there's a lot of frustration from the years of this rebuild, and you know, looking down the highway and seeing Leafs above them in the standings and producing a lot more highlights, I think is not helping things.
You know, and you need if you're in one of these rebuilds, you need some luck, and you know they. Look, Buffalo, don't win the lottery and don't get McDavid. I mean, if McDavid's with Buffalo, it's a whole different story. We're talking about how far ahead Buffalo are. It's that lucky. Matthews, the Leafs get a little lucky break. They get Matthews. He looks like a franchise player. Makes all the difference. That's not somebody being smart taking Matthews.
Sure.
That's just a little bit of luck.
In Buffalo's defense, they did everything they could to maximize their potential to get Connor McDavid.
And they were devastated.
Every time a goaltender made a save, he got a train ticket, and he was gone. Mm. They went, I mean, it was one of the more obvious throw jobs that we've seen in years around the NHL.
And unfortunately for them, they still got a heck of a player. I mean, Eichel's going to end up, even with his injury and what he's missed, what is he, on pace for 30?
Heck of a player.
He's a heck of a player.
20 goals in his rookie season.
Yeah, he's a heck of a player. So they're going to be fine there. And Buffalo, I really believe that they're going to be okay. But you got to get the odd break. And, I mean, look at Edmonton. Edmonton spent $75 million trying to sign free agent defensemen over the last number of years. All of a sudden, they get McDavid. Now we're talking about the Edmonton Oilers in a totally different vein.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is they lowered the odds after Buffalo, that 2015 draft, for when you finish last. So the Leafs actually had a less percent chance, I don't remember them off the top of my head, to get the number one pick last year by them finishing last.
Yep.
I mean, you talk about luck. They could have fallen to fourth and had Jesse Puljujärvi, who's still trending to be a good player somewhere down the road, but it's not a guy who's got 22 goals by halfway through the season. I mean,
I know the ifs and buts game is, you know, hindsight 2020 and all that. But again, if Austin Matthews is born 2 days before he is actually born, and he's on the 15th, not the 17th of September, and he's available for that draft 2 years ago, and at that point, Eichel was still a shade better than Austin Matthews. And I know there would have been a spirited discussion in that room, but if you're the Buffalo
Sabres... So he's in Arizona, is what you're saying, instead of Strome?
Wouldn't that have been interesting? And then it's up to the Maple Leafs, and who do you take, Strome or Marner?
Probably Strome at that time.
Probably. So,
although Mark Hunter would have made his voice heard in that one.
So much, to your point, though, Doug.
Yeah, you
just don't know. So much on the ice and off the ice is luck. Now, the comparisons between Eichel and Matthews are going to be made every time these two teams face each other. Mm-hmm. I think eventually it'll probably be Alex versus Willie Nylander as well. That's an interesting sidebar, you know, Sabres and Maple Leafs QEW rivalry. Did we learn anything or glean anything, Chris, from Matthews versus Eichel, the first chapter yesterday?
Matthews certainly had the better of run of play in that game, for sure, in the faceoff dot, possession-wise. He scored a goal, had five shots on net in the game. And, you know, I think it was a big game for Austin because, remember, he didn't play very well on Saturday in Ottawa, and he said it as much himself. He had that nice play where he lost the faceoff on purpose and set up a goal, but they didn't generate very much at all against the Senators. And, you know, I think that what we'll be watching with Austin Matthews is there a dip? I mean, when he has those bad games, can he pull out of it? And right away there, he didn't string two in a row together. And you know, that's...
Anything when they were on the ice together, Matthews and Eichel?
Well, there's a few times... I think, and I should have asked, I didn't ask Mike Babcock this, but it's not a coincidence that was his matchup on the night. Because, he's been giving him sometimes a number one or number two center, depends. I mean, he's mixing it around, but I think the fact that they're two American guys, they're being compared, they know each other. I think Babs was a little challenge there for Austin. And you know, a few times where away from the play where he's kind of giving a little cross check, you know, kind of letting Jack know it's not going to be an easy night. A few takeaways from him,
yeah.
I think that he rose to the occasion, but it's only one game. I mean, who knows?
Sure. Anything, Doug, before we move on and talk about the Islanders?
The guy that sort of has caught me off guard is Gardner. You know, you would have said a year, you know, before Babcock came here that Gardner was getting close to being run out of town, you know?
Under Carlisle, he was.
He looked that way. And it looked like he had no confidence. He looked like he was – you were really wondering if he was ever going to be that good young defenseman that everybody had –
He's still not everyone's cup of tea, Doug.
Oh, I know he's not. But you know what? I'll tell you what. He's been much better. He's played much better than I thought he was capable of. And credit has to go to the coaching staff for a lot of that. And him. He had a tough year. Mm-hmm. You know, so the fact that he's Babcock loves puck movers. He loves that game. He inherited that when he ended up in Detroit with Lidstrom. And it's carried on. So... He fits in with that. I didn't know that they would mesh.
Yeah.
You know, I really didn't know if they'd mesh. And credit to both of them, he's been better than I thought he'd be. And I agree. He's never going to always be your cup of tea because he's going to make big mistakes.
But curious to see at what point, I think a lot of people are waiting for this as well, because Jake Gardner, in some ways, a little bit of a sheltered defenseman. He doesn't get the top assignments.
Yeah.
And you wonder now with Morgan Rielly out, and here's the update according to Mike Babcock, injured just day-to-day, opportunity perhaps for Frank Corrado now to get in the lineup. But to the point about Jake Gardner, you wonder if now this is finally the opportunity where consistently, you know, he won't be a semi-sheltered defenseman and he'll play against top lines.
It has to be. I mean, they don't really, with Martin Marincin out and there's no timetable on his return, they don't really have another option on the left side to fill that number one role. And you know, Mike will probably end up using his defenseman differently with this rotation than he did. I mean, Morgan Rielly, very clearly in his pairing with Zaitsev, was getting the best competition, the toughest minutes, and it was a very offensive kind of role for the second one with Gardner and Carrick. Now he's going to get more of a chance, and you know, at this stage in his career, he should be able to handle it. I mean, there's a bit of an X factor, an unknown to that. But it's a heck of an opportunity. Look, he's put up a ton of points this year relative to where he's been in the past. He's been very consistent. And you know, Mike has been pretty effusive in his praise about Jake Gardner. So I think he'll trust him in that elevated role.
She mentions while John Davidson, Columbus Blue Jackets president, will join us around 12:40 Eastern here on the program. Arthur Staple from Newsday still to come as well. We'll get into the Jack Capuano situation right now, more with Arthur Staple at the bottom of the hour. Doug, we'll start with you. You've been there hiring. You've been there firing. You've been a GM. You've been a head coach. When you heard the news yesterday, what went through your mind about Jack Capuano out and Doug Waite in as the interim head coach of the Islanders?
I can't say it surprised me. You know, you knew... What's frustrating is they end the season last year, you know, where they have a you know, the underdog and they beat the Panthers in the first round in a good series.
Six games against the Caps. They
played pretty well. Then they go six games against the Caps. And you think you'd end the season saying we feel pretty good. And they had a bad summer. They had a bad summer. And, you know, you lose Okposo, you lose Franz Nielsen, you just don't have the type of offseason you hope to have to build on a decent playoff start. And, you know, I know it wasn't a deep run, but it was certainly better than we've seen in the past. And then he pays the price. You know, Ladd, why did they let Okposo go? There's been some rumblings. They thought they had a chance. They really believed they had a legitimate chance to get Stamkos. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, that's taken a lot for granted when you count on that. And a bad offseason by management, and it cost him his job.
The one thing I've to like about the Islanders, I think, in recent years, in addition to John Tavares, obviously, is they did have stability. And I think sometimes when organizations get in the cycle of changing everything all the time, you're kind of chasing your tail a little bit. And I think one of their strengths was they had all those guys, and to lose those sort of fundamental pieces in your lineup of Franz Nielsen. I mean, I know that it's a tough decision to give him the long-term money that Detroit did, just in terms of, you know, trying to figure out where he's going to be at 5 years from now. But I agree with Doug. I mean, I don't know that there's much Jack Capuano could have done. With new ownership in there and the discussions they're having about creating a president's role, you know, where does Garth Snow fit into this? I just think it was a matter of time if the team struggled, and, you know, lo and behold, they did, and he's looking for work.
Elliot Friedman reporting last night on Twitter that Gerard Gallant, the Islanders have asked and received permission to talk to him about the Islanders' position. Any surprise to you, Doug?
But that was 3 weeks ago that they asked for permission. They still had a coach when they asked for permission, sure, is my understanding.
Would that be tempting to do? I mean, you know Gerard Gallant.
People thought it was yesterday they asked for permission.
Yeah.
After they fired their coach, but it was 3 weeks ago.
Well, one thing.
So maybe they asked for permission to be his assistant. I don't know. He was still working when they asked for permission.
Yeah.
One thing Garth Snow said is that he could better conduct the coaching search with Jack out of the picture, which, if you're reading between the lines, is I've been conducting the coaching search,
yeah,
and this is getting a bit awkward.
Yeah. So, you know, it is, you know, look, anytime there's an NHL job available, for somebody to say, I'm not interested in it, there's only 30 of them in
31.
Yeah, there's 31. There's only 31. When you're unemployed, you got to look at everyone. Would I guess that it's his number one, option? Well, it's the only option right now, except for that in Vegas. And they haven't really, I guess they're starting their search slowly, but they're not going to start their search till they see who's fired.
Who's falling off the vine at the end of the season.
And that's probably what the Islanders should do as well, unless they really are sold on somebody. I mean, Gerard would be a good choice for either of those jobs.
If they're sold, they can turn this around midseason and make a playoff push. Otherwise.
Have you looked at their schedule?
Write it out. Oh, no, I know. Listen,
I mean, it's a horrendous schedule coming up for the Islanders. And, I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Of course not.
You know, they're not going to make it. So why not just leave Doug Wade in and conduct the proper search? And that's unless Gerard is interested and will take the job. If I'm Gerard Gallant, am I going to jump at a job that nobody really knows how secure the GM is?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you want those assurances if you're doing it.
Well, is it not exactly what happened to him in Florida? You know, you go in with Dale, Dale's pushed aside, and all of a sudden it's a gong show. You know, so he's out of a job.
Then perhaps if the Islanders, and you mentioned stability a second ago, CJ, further to that point, then the next order of business one would assume for the Islanders is secure two very specific positions, one team president, two general manager.
Well, and look, if you're going to make Garth, if you're going to come out, if ownership comes out and says Garth's our guy, that's totally different. But right now, I would think Garth's a little nervous. But maybe Garth moves up, becomes the president. Maybe he stays at GM. I don't know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest question, though, everyone's asking in hockey is how long does he have? Is he going to be the guy? It'd be hard to take that job, especially if you're Gerard and you feel that you're going to get another opportunity somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I don't know for a fact that he will, but, I mean, he's still pretty well thought of with the way everything went down in Florida.
Could you see a scenario whereby Garth Snow gets elevated to team president and a new general manager, perhaps someone that Gerard Gallant has worked with in the past?
Are you pointing at Dale Tallon?
Just waiting to see if someone will take the bait. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly a secret that Dale Tallon and Garth Snow are relatively close.
I thought Dale Tallon was put back in charge in Florida, I read a few weeks ago.
Depends who you ask, Mr. McLean. Yeah, depends who you ask.
Yeah, I think so. I know if you ask other GMs in the league, they'll tell you that's not who they talk to when they phone
them. Some agents as well.
Yeah. But
how much of this is because John Tavares and due to John Tavares? And how much of this is trying to massage John Tavares before we go to break?
Well, I think everything the Islanders do between now and 2018, the summer of 2018, has to be viewed through that prism. I mean, it's no secret they want to keep him. And, you know, he's such a loyal guy. I mean, I feel like for John Tavares, it must be a battle because he's a competitive guy and he's an extremely loyal guy. And I'm sure this was going to be a very tough year and a half for him.
He's taken a very team-friendly contract for a lot of years.
And you know, he really thought there was an upward trajectory there when they finished last season. He really did, I think. And now it's back to where do we go here with this team?
Well, let's think where he was last April, scoring that goal in Game 7 to send him to the second round for the first time in 20-odd years. I mean, to go from that to this must just be
frustrating.
A punch to the gut.
Yeah, totally.
Quick thought before we get a break.
What's with the suit? Is that for today's show or do you have something else on today?
I have a meeting afterwards.
Interview or something? What?
I have a meeting afterwards.
Oh, interviewing at the Allen?
I wish I would have known. Both of you look good.
I just have the open collar. John Davidson still to come. The Columbus Blue Jackets ending the Carolina Hurricanes streak last night. Last night was another wild night around the NHL. Two nights ago, we had the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals taking us back to 1986 with an 8-7 game. And then last night, 7-6 between the New York Rangers and the Dallas Stars. As Lindy Ruff's team coming out on top.
That was bizarre. And now today, all the word is there's goaltending problems. Who's the last team you'd think would have goaltending issues? One of the
Montreal if Price is healthy.
And New York.
And New York Rangers. Today, the New York Rangers have goaltending issues, apparently.
Yeah.
Lundqvist, his game is off and... I mean, we talked about this, 3 weeks ago on the show?
Yep.
Where he was, he was out. He wasn't hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And now that's sort of the talk. Goaltending problems with the Rangers and King Henry.
Yeah.
Not quite buying that yet, but we'll see.
Well, and the tough part is...
It's been that way for a while, though.
I know. It has. And Larry Brooks is the guy that wrote it, and Larry is on top of what goes on there. And, you know, he's got a pretty good feel because he sees them every day.
Sure.
And... He's saying it, essentially.
Well, and what's changed from a month ago is Antti Raanta, who's had a great season as a backup, isn't around right now. He's injured.
Yeah.
So it's a real problem if Lundqvist is struggling to the degree they believe and they don't really have another guy to play.
But you know what? Interesting conversation with one Zuccarello said, we know Hank's struggling. We gotta be better for him. I'm thinking, I don't know if Hank's going to like that.
I don't know if he's going to appreciate someone coming out and mention that he's struggling, although the evidence was there at Madison Square Garden last night. Big win by the Dallas Stars. We do have to hit a break. Arthur Staple from Newsday, more on the Jack Capuano firing yesterday, and John Davidson of the very legit, it's not just a streak, Columbus Blue Jackets. That's still to come when Hockey Central returns. Merrick and for Millard alongside Chris Johnston and Doug McClain on Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on the NHL Network stateside.
A podcast that casts a wide net across the internet of sports. The Andrew Walker Show. Subscribe in iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard alongside Chris Johnston and Doug McClain. Quick little note as well. There has been a fine in the NHL. Chris Kreider fined $5,000 for hitting Cody Eakin with his helmet in a fight yesterday. This is shades of Fistrick and Nystrom from 7 years
ago. Darcy Tucker in the playoffs.
And Cam Jansen. And both of those were fines as well. Yevgeny Artukin, though, on Antoine Vermette 6 or 7 years ago. That was a 2-game suspension, but that was when Colin Campbell was the sheriff. It seems as if the cost of doing business for that type of event now is a fine. $5,000 is removed now from Chris Kreider. Let's get right to our first guest this half hour. He is from Newsday. He is our friend Arthur Staple. For more on the firing of Jack Capuano yesterday. Arthur, thanks so much for doing this. Surprised at all yesterday at how everything went down?
I guess the timing of it maybe was a bit of a surprise, just given that, you know, the season's really not getting any better for them from the first 20 or so games when Gar Snow gave Jack a vote of confidence. And then here we are midway through. They're still not doing very well. So I kind of would have thought that they would have waited to the end of the season and maybe had a full house cleaning if things keep going the way they're going. But I guess Gar Snow decided make the change now, see if putting Doug Wade in, new voice, can get them going with 40 games to go and a pretty crazy hill to climb. But I guess still mathematically they've got a shot, so they're going to go for it.
I guess the question, Arthur, is Garth, you know, has had a pretty good run here. And obviously every time a GM fires a coach, the question is, what's the GM status? Do you know where he fits with this new ownership group? Is he going to be bumped up to president? Is a new GM coming in, or is he going to stay? Are you confident he'll stay in this job?
You know, Doug, I wish I knew the answer to that. I think you can only really read the tea leaves and what they're telling us with John Ledecky and Scott Malkin talking, you know, pretty openly to a lot of different people around the league for this, you know, a possible, you know, president of hockey operations. That says to me that they're looking to make big changes, and unless things turn around, you could see a situation where they hire a president who's going to work with Gar Snow as a GM, and you know, you see that in a couple of different cities where that's working, whether it's working well or not, whether it's a situation where a new team president who has final say keeps an old GM, whether that's workable is hard to know, but I think it's a very tenuous situation for everybody here. Like you said, they've had a long run. Garth's been here over a decade. Capuano is close to 500 games coach with this team with three playoff appearances. So, you know, it's hard to say that that it would be premature in any way, but we'll have to see what happens. To me, all the signs are pointing towards someone new coming in who's going to make final decisions, whether it's keeping Garth, whether it's hiring a new coach, whether it's beefing up the front office. I think a lot of those things are still remain to be done, probably at the end of this season.
Have you heard any names? Like, we, you know, I'm hearing LaFontaine, Brad Richards, but I mean, those don't seem like the typical president of hockey ops names. I know Pat in Buffalo for a month, but however long he was there.
They seem to be going more for names rather than people who've, you know, put in long years working in front offices. So, you know, that's hard to know exactly where they're going to go with it. Maybe they've talked to more people than we've all heard about, but it's definitely been a process that's been ongoing, and perhaps there could be some surprising people to come in later on in the process, you know, once we get to the off season. But for now, they seem to be looking for someone who's going to be kind of a splashy name, whether it's a recently retired player, whether it's someone like Pat Poisson, who's a, you know, a big agent and they could try to entice to come to Brooklyn. I don't see it being someone who's put in the many years and is more of an up and coming guy. I think they're going for a bigger headline name, and then they're going to go from there.
Arthur, the team was on the ice today. Just curious, what was, I guess, the attitude? What was Doug Wade saying? And do you see any scenario where he could potentially outlast the interim label that's been placed on him?
You know, they've got to play, what, you know, 700 hockey, I guess, the rest of the way to really have give themselves a shot. I guess if they can pull that off, then sure, it is, that's a way to earn a job. But, you know, in the short term, I think, you know, Doug is a guy that a lot of people know around the league from his days playing and just being part of this organization. He's a very articulate guy. He's a guy who, you know, tries to inspire with a lot of his own, you know, passion for the game when he played. And I think that's what he's leaning on to start with. I'm sure he's going to make some changes, you know, tweak structurally or ice time with certain guys. You know, he's the reason that Andrew Ladd is an Islander. He, you know, he helped recruit him. They played together and won a cup in Carolina. And I think, you know, for Doug, it's personal that Andrew Ladd has had such a rough start to the season. He's out with an injury right now, but, you know, maybe that's a guy who he tries to pump up a little bit. A guy like Ryan Strome, who's had a bit of a love-hate relationship with Jack Capuano in his time here, maybe he's a guy who gets a little bit more of the love side from Doug Wade. So I think there's certainly individual players and obviously a team that's been languishing the way they have. Their shots for and against have been terrible. this year and even last year. So maybe that's a way that they can change, try to be a bit more of a possession team like they were 2 years ago. But I think really it's, you know, when you have a midseason firing and a guy like, you know, a guy who was an assistant takes over, I think it's more just about reminding everyone what their part was in seeing this coach fired. And really, I think the players kind of seem to take that to heart. Certainly John Tavares, who's kind of been the consummate captain, said as much today after practice that it's on the guys in the room, and now they need to show that that they still deserve to be together these last 40 games.
Arthur, you mentioned Ryan Strome a second ago. I see him and Calvin DeHaan mixed it up, dropped the gloves at practice today. What's the issue there?
I think it's just two guys who, you know, and Calvin DeHaan, oddly enough, has been another guy who Jack Capone was pretty hard on in his time here. I think it's two guys maybe venting a little bit of the frustration or just, you know, trying to feel that there's something to show that, you know, they're not guys that are worthy of being the whipping boys anymore with a new voice and a new head coach watching them. So, you know, I think it's just there's been plenty of frustration to go around with this team. It's really the first time it's boiled over in practice, and I think they both shrugged it off afterwards. But perhaps it was just trying to show a little bit of the fire and spark that they're going to need these next 40 games if they're going to have any chance of getting back in this playoff race.
Well, just quickly, I know it puts you on a spot a little bit, but what about the offseason this team had? I mean, it was horrendous. I mean, seriously.
What do you really think, Doug?
Well, no, like Okposo walks. I mean, what happened there? Like, was it because they wanted Ladd that bad? Did they think they were getting Stamkos? Like, what happened?
You know, I think Doug, there was a lot of moving parts that all moved against them. Kyle Okposo was seemingly strictly a decision of they didn't feel he was the guy that was worth $6 million a year for 8 years, which they would have had to give him to keep him here. You know, that I don't know if Andrew Ladd was their number one choice to replace him, but that was the guy they ended up with. And, you know, Matt Martin was a guy that they saw that priced out as well. Franz Nielsen is really the one where you can say it was an unequivocal mistake that they waited so long to really start serious negotiations with him, whether it was because they wanted to keep money free for a Stamkos offer or who knows. But Franz Nielsen was a pretty indispensable guy for this team. And, you know, not necessarily a huge difference maker. You see, he hasn't exactly lifted Detroit all the way up. But as a complimentary piece to John Tavares and a guy who can do a little bit of everything, I think they knew his value and probably didn't act quickly enough to keep him. And when you lose all three of those guys at once,
that's what I mean. It's tough on the coach.
Any two new guys come in, it's a lot of burden on them, on whether it's Ladd and Chimera. And then they waive P.A. Parenteau, who was a familiar face who could have helped them offensively. That's a difficult spot for a coach. And then not getting good goaltending to start the year is going to hurt anybody. So it was a bit of a perfect storm. And sure, some of it was definitely preventable.
And then P.A. Parenteau gets picked up by the New Jersey Devils and starts scoring goals. Arthur, thanks as always for stopping by. Much appreciated.
Arthur. Thank you, guys. Anytime.
Arthur Staple from Newsday commenting on the Jack Capuano firing from yesterday. I believe we have John Davidson, who is the team president of the Columbus Blue Jackets, standing by. J.D., how are you today, sir?
Good, thanks. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing very well.
We haven't talked to you in ages.
Where you been?
We were looking for you for a couple of years, so I'm really glad that you're out front again.
Geez, I didn't know you still noticed the Blue Jackets that much.
Nah. It's a minor obsession around here, John, as you well know.
And the one thing is I haven't heard from Rimmer in 10 days, so that's been a blessing.
Oh, that's impossible.
You know, the streak is one thing, and a lot was made of it, and for good reason. But I'm watching last night, and I see Carolina go up a puck, and right away your team storms back to say, yeah, this isn't going to happen. We're going to end your streak. And by the end of the game, I'm saying to myself, this is a dangerous color. This isn't just a team that got on a roll and a hot goaltender and things went well and, you know, stayed away from the man games, lost. I looked at last night's game and I said, man, Columbus is legit. At what point this season, JD, did you look at your team and say, you know what, this is a lot better than as advertised?
Well, I think that even last season what happened, we were better than what happened. And it's still hard to figure out exactly what happened. But I know this season when we opened the season with a loss to Boston after having a 3-1 lead in the game, we went down with a thud, and it was an awful thud, a sold-out building. And Doug knows how important that is here in Columbus. You get the audience there, you want to do well. It was a thud. And then we played two nights later, down 2-0 real early to San Jose, and then started to play a little better, lost 3-2, I think it was. And then, just because it was the way it was, we had 5 days off. And thankfully for that, because the coaches really had a chance to roll up their sleeves, the players did too, and they went to work. And we started to come out of this thing, and they played pretty well for the most part this season. I just think that when you analyze our group, we're younger and faster and quicker getting the puck out of our zone. Bobrovsky, obviously, has been a lot better than a year ago. The infusion of the young players that we have with the Werenskis and the Sedlaks and the Andersons, et cetera, they're bona fide players. They're young, they're fast, they're players that know how to play. And then the players up front that didn't do well last year have all had bounce back seasons. So you start adding up all those things together, it kind of points in the direction as to why we're a better hockey club than what we were.
You know, you had the unbelievable run, and then, you know, you have the tough one in Washington against a team that was playing as well as they've played. And then, you know, you lose 3 or 4 or something. Bobrovsky's sick. I mean, but to bounce back with a good performance last night is a positive. I mean, won in Tampa where maybe you didn't deserve to win. You lose in Florida, but a real good bounce back win last night.
Yeah. We won in Tampa. It was a pretty good game. It was something that I thought in a lot of ways we played fairly well. We were at a bad start in that game for sure. We weren't very good early, but then we were real good in the second half. So I felt pretty good about it. The game in Florida, we weren't very good. We gave them 2 or 3 gift-wrapped goals, the one from behind the goal line on Korpisalo, one where the young defenseman, Nutravara, slipped and lost his balance and gave them a freebie. You can't win in this league when that happens. But then they got home, and they had a good day to practice the day before yesterday. We weren't going on all cylinders by any means last night, but we were better, and that's a good thing. And I just watched them practice again today. It's very businesslike, this group. You know, this team wins a game, they don't hear blaring music in the locker room and things like that. They go about their business, and I think Doug, I think you'd agree that you've got to create a culture where your room is run by the leadership of the team. If there's issues, the coach has to be able to have good communication and straighten it out. Since I've been here, this is the best our room has been by far. And I think that also adds up into this whole thing. Bounce back, yeah, we got a long way to go. We know we've done some good things. We're still young, but we're trending. It's a good thing for us.
John, we're at kind of a funny time in the league where there's not one alpha dog team or 2 or 3 that you point to and say, these are the teams that are definitely going to be playing for the cup at the end of this thing. I mean, given that you guys are up among the very top of the league, I mean, where's the level of expectation for you? And what do you, I guess, think that this team is capable of this year?
Yeah, I don't know yet for sure. I know that I've been impressed with the veterans compared to what's happened here in the past. I've been very impressed with that. You always have a chance to win when Bobrovsky's on his game, and he certainly has been. The young players, they're going to hit the wall now and again. They just are. It's just what it is. They've never been through this grind. You take a Zach Werenski, who's a terrific young player. He's played as many games this year as he played all last year, and that was a full season in college hockey. So it's going to be interesting as we move forward. Your depth has to carry you. We're a club that relies on 4 lines in our D, and I think we've got some players throughout the organization that if we have issues with injuries and such, we're going to be able to fill in okay. But I'm not sure. It's a team that I don't want us to get ahead of ourselves. I don't want to start promising things or saying things. It doesn't make any sense at all when you're as young as our group is. But it also, on the other side of it, it's a club that I can't sit here and say they're not going to do something because they just might. That's the type of club it's been this season. They battle, they fight, they don't get down. The coaching staff's done a terrific job, and it's not just Torts. Torts is the head coach, so you hear a lot about him. Bradshaw and Brad Larson and Ian Clark, all these guys have done a terrific job. So we're a club that I don't know what our ceiling is because we haven't been there. But nothing would surprise me with this group. Let's put it that way.
So you're guaranteeing this is the year you win a playoff round?
You know, I've been around the block too many times. And people seem to have, write things down and pull it out a month or two later and have something to say. So I'm just going to say that I just want our club to keep evolving. I want the young players in particular to experience things. An example would be the game we played in Minnesota. They had 12-game winning streak. We had 14 or something. And it was like a playoff atmosphere in that building. And for us, missing the playoffs last year and having such a down year, for a lot of those players to go through that, and the young ones in particular, that's what you want on their resume as we move throughout the season. The season's going to get tougher. We have a 15-game March schedule, a lot of them on the road. So it's going to get tougher and tougher and tougher, but the players need to go through this. It's got to be part of their resume going north. And I like the experience that they're getting right now.
JD, the two biggest surprises in the East, you and Toronto probably, you know, you look at your man games last year, 500+. Yeah. This year, you and the Leafs are both two of the least injured teams. It really can play havoc, obviously. You look at Buffalo in here last night. I mean, the tough start they've had with injuries. It's amazing how, because I remember Jay Feaster saying that when they won the Stanley Cup, he used to go down and say a prayer every night before he went to bed. Keep my team healthy, and they had like 12 man games lost.
Isn't it something?
Are you on your hands and knees at night?
Oh, absolutely. I touch wood. I'm wearing the...
Your knees aren't that good.
No. If I can go down, I just can't get up. No, but you're absolutely right. You look at Washington. I don't know if they've had an injury all year.
Exactly.
You know, it's really quite something. And here, the one thing I will say is that with John Tortorella coming here and the Riot Act being read to everybody at the end of last season, and what he expected going into camp regarding conditioning and things, there's no doubt in my mind that that's made a difference. It just has. When you're at the top of your conditioning level, it's not only the conditioning level, but your mind and your head gets strong too, and that helps you get through all this stuff. Lady Luck plays a part of it without question, and the results are that if your best players are healthy, you have a better chance of winning every night. It's pretty obvious. And you're right. Last season and the year before, it was just nuts. Every time we turn around, a player was going down. And it affects your budget, things like that, all kinds of different things.
Listen,
it's been good.
If Rimmer asks, obviously Rimmer's lost my number. If he asks for it, do not give it, please.
You know what I just saw?
Please don't.
Not long ago was the 50 best places, one per state, for early bird specials. So I'm going to forward it to him.
Listen, he got mad at me because when you guys were playing in that big game, you know, in Washington, you know, he said, are you watching my broadcast? I said, Rims, everybody's watching the World Junior game in Canada. They're not watching the Washington-Columbus game. Sorry. And he got mad at me. Please tell him not to call. I don't miss him.
He'll be listening. I'll guarantee he's listening right now.
He tapes it. What do you mean listening? Did they mention my name? His number. Did JD mention my name?
He's the best. If you can imagine, quite a few years ago, we went to high school together in Calgary.
Well, you played midget AAA together, didn't you?
Well, he lasted half a practice.
See you later. Good luck, JD.
Thanks, John.
The double runner skate he had didn't work.
Yeah. The butter cutters are tough when you're playing at that level. Thanks, JD.
Take care.
John Davidson is the president of the Columbus Blue Jackets. That was an impressive win last night because Carolina going into that one.
They are
rolling along with four lines, really good defense, and a goal shot. They got chased yesterday, running Nedeljkovic, but still.
We see it every night, don't we? Like goaltending, and JD said it, Bobrovsky gives them a chance every night to win. Yep. And you think about that trade when he was traded. Scott Housen makes that trade and acquires Bobrovsky. Philadelphia essentially had given up on him.
Yep.
And, you know, then Mason goes from Columbus to Philly. I'll tell you what, Bobrovsky, the confidence he's given this team is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And if you look right at the bottom of the save percentage for teams, Philadelphia's there right now.
I know.
So if you're wondering any mystery why they've been struggling after that long winning streak?
10-game winning streak. Maybe the first time to have a 10-game winning streak and then miss the playoffs. Carolina could have jumped them last night with a win over Columbus. That's a disappointing thing if you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan. To the other point about the goaltending, what's the old saying? If you have a goalie, it's 70%. No, if you have a goalie, it's...
Show me a good goalie, and I'll show you a good coach.
No, if you have a good goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't, it's 100. There we go.
And then you get some goalies that yell at their coaches.
That was Buffalo last night.